Hello everybody, welcome back. It is the season 3 finale of Blockchain Won't Save the World, and we have gone big. The first ever roast to happen live on LinkedIn. I am joined by 5 exceptional individuals, and we are here for another roast. It is the traditional format. We end the season with a roast to look back in a lighthearted way at some of the stupid nonsense that's been going on in Web3 over the previous months. And in this case, it's the bear market. We've been under pressure. We've had difficult economic situations. It's been difficult to raise, difficult to grow. The FUD has been firing in. The regulators have been coming at us from all directions, but we are still here. And I am joined by 5 wonderful individuals today. We've got Sweezy, the enterprise guy. We've got Irina, the crypto lawyer. Sandra, she's been a metaverse builder. Keir Finlow Bates, AKA Blockchain Gandalf, architect, engineer, and architect of the Authorverse, which is still and remains doomed. And Emily Landon, one of the most creative, one of the most amusing Web3 recruiters out there. We've got them all here for your entertainment. And without further ado, let's introduce the crew. Guys, for people who don't know you, what is the one thing you are most proud of in your experience working with blockchain? And I'm gonna start with Sweezy.
My name is Matt.
Are you
Sweezy
with us, Sweezy?
Yeah, that's how I was on mute. I founded the Salesforce Web3 studio, so convincing a giant corporation to dive into Web3 was fun.
Not a bad claim to fame. I like that. Emily, you're up next.
I am super proud of making 287 hires and making an immediate impact in a ton of people's lives.
Love that. Placing people in their dream jobs. Can't complain. Sandra, what's your most proud blockchain moment?
I have to say it would have to be arguing with everyone that the metaverse isn't dead. That definitely has to be it, yeah.
Continuing to win the argument that the metaverse isn't dead. Sandra is living proof.
Pretty much.
Keir Finlow Bates, what is your claim to fame?
Yeah, I thought about this one and I decided on airdropping 1.5 quindecillion NFTs, one into every single Ethereum address. So that's 1.5 followed by 47 zeros. It's the largest airdrop known to humanity.
The largest ever dusting attack recorded in Web3, courtesy of Keir Finlow Bates. And Irina, a returnee to the roast, great to have you back. I'm sure you've claimed many other things and many other successes in the last year, but what is your proudest Web3 moment?
My proudest moment is contributing to the growth of the Dubai ecosystem, making Dubai as the Web3 hub of the world, as we like to call ourselves. I'm advising regulators. I'm actually just completed drafting a completely new regulation for a regulator in the UAE, making UAE is even more friendly towards Web3. If all goes well, inshallah, as we say, this new regulation will be approved before the new year, and then we can talk about it openly. But for now, I'm proud to put in the tiniest effort, my biggest effort, but my tiniest contribution to the entire ecosystem in Dubai.
There we go. Irina Hever, rewriting the landscape and regulation as we know it for Web3. Thank you for your service. I'm sure the UAE is grateful, as are we, for your presence today. Thank you for joining us, and thank you everybody who's made it here. Without further ado, Sweezy, please get us started. For those people who may be listening and saying, Anthony, guys, what the hell are you talking about with bears? Give us your rundown, please, of what is the bear market?
So I think I got a humorous and a real one. So the bear market from the humorous way and easy ways. You remember when you transitioned from middle school to high school and you were like the coolest shit kid in middle school, and then you come back and your best friend Adam is now got a mustache and he's like 7 feet tall and everyone's all about Adam, and all in the hallways is AI for president and you're like AI for student council and you're like, God, I just want to be cool again. To me, that's like the bear market. But really, it's this dip when no one really cares about us and everyone's looking at other things. So the bear market is when things have cooled off, trading's down, and that's where we are.
That's it. So it's that down moment in the cycle. We've passed the initial hype. We've passed the initial excitement. Maybe there's some macroeconomic factors going on in the background. Suddenly, everything just feels a little bit harder. People stop returning your calls so quickly. VCs stop throwing money your way. The token prices don't pump quite as hard as you might want them to. People stop looking and saying, you start getting fewer likes on the posts, fewer retweets. Everything just seems a little bit harder. Does anybody else have a good definition of a bear market or anything else to chime in on with your experience of what a bear market is?
So I actually know that we've had a bear market when my phone starts blowing up with people tagging me, asking me what's happening to the price. Literally, I get slander, defamation, people harassing me. Why is the price gone down? Why aren't you doing your job? I'm like, oh, it's not me. It has nothing to do with me. Honestly, absolutely nothing. So that's how I know that we've hit a bear market generally. People are brilliant in doing their job.
So when the community starts caroning in and just saying, I want to speak to the manager, please. I'm down bad. Can devs just do something? Can you affect the token price?
It is literally the expectation reality of, can I please speak to the manager? My cheeseburger is not correct. And I have nothing to do with it. Absolutely nothing.
That's a good one. I like that. Anyone else got a favorite definition of a bear market, or what's an indicator of when you know things are going bad?
Something similar to Sandra's, my 73-year-old mother-in-law messaged me asking if my job at Bitcoin was okay, because she heard all the grim stories and she saw how much Bitcoin was down. She genuinely believes I work at Bitcoin, like working at Apple or working at Microsoft. And she asked me if my job was okay. She's 73. So I said, no, don't worry. My job is okay. It's actually good. It's actually really good. That's when I knew that we are not in the bear market. We're in the nuclear winter of the crypto.
There we go. Don't worry, people. The Bitcoins are safe. Irina's on the case. She's guarding them all in her magical shelf behind with the Australian flag. All the Bitcoins are safe. They're not going to get hacked. You're okay. Kia Finlow Bates, anything to add on top?
Follow on from what Irina was saying. So let me see if I could show you. This is the price of Bitcoin over the last 365 days, right? So apparently that's what a bear market looks like in Bitcoin. Any other stock would be looking at it and going, oh, we've doubled steadily over a year. So that's what I find really funny, is it's all tied to price. And not only is it all tied to price, but they don't actually seem to pay attention to the price, or rather the criteria on which it is judged seem to be completely different from all the other markets that you see out there. And I think really, ultimately, it's in our minds rather than any kind of objective sort of thing.
I actually thought that was a Renaissance painting you were holding up.
Was it visible enough?
It's,
yeah, that looks pretty good to me, right? Anything else, you'd be going, yeah, that's really great. That's the last year. And I'm asking the question, are we really still in a bear market?
But I guess we have to separate Bitcoin from everything else, right? From Web3.
Yeah, but I would say that it's what everything tracks, right? You have individual things that do well, but generally in fact, here's another picture. Maybe you recognize this one, right? I should have got this all lined up.
Stats that's brought to you live by Keir Finlow Bates. This is very sophisticated stuff.
Yeah, that's a familiar shape, isn't it? I think everybody in the Web3 crypto space recognizes that, yeah? So there's that lovely mountain at the end there. I think people get so carried away when they're going up that mountain, that when they drop down the other end, it's so painful that it takes them years to recover. But if you'd look at it just over the last year, then it's fine. So there's this weird dichotomy of focus on daily prices or hourly prices versus this kind of longer term thing of every 4 years or so going through these cycles.
I wonder if you were to take that chart and put it next to an ECG, if people would be able to tell the difference between one time, right? Or the price of a coin going up and down, up and down.
Well, I mean, personally, I don't pay attention to the prices.
I haven't checked, to be honest, in many years, to be fair.
But the thing is that when we're talking about a bear market, of course, it's a market, and therefore people are looking at prices. And I wonder how long are their memories, right?
Because I think we're assuming, just because you've been in the space for this long and you have such a long sort of horizon that you're looking over, that everybody else has the same. So many people are coming in like literally like 3-4 months ago. And there are so few Bitcoin holders, like so few people are yoloing into altcoins. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say shitcoins on live on LinkedIn, but okay, good. So people
it's an official term.
People are... their hard-earned savings into shitcoins that are doing pretty bad. And I don't think we have enough Bitcoiners, Bitcoin Marxists. Yes, I agree with your chart. Overall, Bitcoin has proven to be the best asset As a Bitcoin maxi myself, I'm very happy. Every time Bitcoin goes up, I actually have a little pain in my heart. Oh, I haven't stacked enough. Please don't go up yet. But people are YOLOing into altcoins and losing their love. And then they turn into Bitcoin maxis. And then they realize that if you look at the term and the charts are actually good and healthy, and we're actually doing well. But I think it takes a little bit of maturity for individual to be in the market before they come to the same conclusion as you just shown.
I do think there's one slight difference, which is separating price of Bitcoin from enterprise adoption. Those to me are two radically different things that are not correlated. It doesn't matter if the price goes up. What we're seeing from the enterprise side is, and we'll talk about this, but as soon as AI came out, everyone pivoted away from Web3 inside of a corporate standpoint to say, if we only have so many resources to innovate, we're going to now put all of our innovation resources behind AI and left Web3. And to me, that's like the enterprise bear market of saying, like, how do we essentially get people to start to use this technology? And I think that's the other half. So it's adoption from an enterprise standpoint at the same time of a price from the consumer standpoint.
It's a weird thing, right? You can only focus on one technology at once. Never mind that companies are using machine learning, cloud, Google Suite. They're also using artificial intelligence. They may be exploring Web3. Come on, guys, we've got one priority and it's making everything artificially intelligent. Otherwise, funding gets cut. That's one of my bear market loves.
Yeah, but you can only tell one story, right? That's the problem the companies have. Is when you're going to investors or you're going to the public, you have one tale to tell. And people can't handle multiple threads going through each other. So
need
you
more
have
AIs.
To kind of,
need more marketeers. Yeah. Need better marketeers. We must do better. And on that note, Irina, I'd like to bring you back on this one because I would like you to pick out, please, your favorite loves of a bear market. What are the things that you love to love or the things that you love to hate at this moment in our cycle?
I'm absolutely loving it, how the scammers are leaving Dubai because it became too expensive for them to live there, how it became impossible to scam people, and so we got impossible to raise money for multi-level marketing schemes, which are Ponzi schemes, etc., etc. I'm absolutely loving that. I promised to frame it as a love, so that was my love. The scammers leaving Dubai and jumping onto other more opportune topics such as AI, such as I don't know what else I'm actually not following. And that's good because bear markets or this nuclear winter, which we had for over 900 days, really shook out the bad people in the industry. And this is what we needed because the last bull market was absolutely ridiculous. I'm not sure how it was in other parts of the world, but in Dubai, it was painful to watch people putting in money in Ponzi schemes and then receiving 500% returns a week and attracting more of the friends and family. And then eventually, we all know how it ended eventually. So that's basically what I love about the bear market.
There we go. I wonder where all the scammers go and live when they're not living in Dubai. Is there like a holding cell? Is there a country that represents like low cost living for scammers where they can still not go to jail?
Probably Bali.
That was what I was going to say.
Yeah, it's cheap. And then they all hang out in the same communities together. No shade on the good people living in Bali. But yeah, they'll have to pick something low cost. Or hopefully they return to their countries and got a proper job stacking shelves in supermarkets or whatever they did before they discovered crypto.
McDonald's are hiring 24/7, 365. So there's always opportunities out there, people.
Yeah, 7-Eleven, great job opportunity. So pursue that.
All right. Anybody else got any favorite bear market loves?
Probably the only time I open Twitter.
to be honest. Do you open it with trepidation or do you open it looking forward to an afternoon's entertainment? What is your anticipation moment just before you hit that flick?
Honestly, I open it to be like, what kind of disappointment am I going to face today with this bowl of cereal that I'm trying to have in the morning? You'll be surprised how creative people can get on Twitter. You'd be really surprised. I've seen some amazing memes come out from that.
That's true. There's a lot of people looking to point their anger, disappointment, and frustration at something, someone, or some project. And for some reason in Web3, it just seems to come our way a little bit easier than everybody else. Maybe people thought the gains were going to be easier. Maybe they thought the coin was only going to go up. Maybe they thought that the Lambo was on its way. Just sign up for Web3 and instant Lambo. Yeah, we didn't do a great job of marketing in the first couple of bull markets. So there we go. Sandra, while I've got you on the mic, let's get on to building in the bear. Because Unfortunately or fortunately, you've been trying to build a couple of different businesses now in the last 900 days. What's that been like as an experience compared to, you know, previous times you've worked or started to work on projects? Because I think a lot changes, right?
Yeah, probably the best way to answer that is what I've been doing personally isn't building a certain, I guess you could say, project. It's more being part of Zilliqa, which is a layer one from Singapore. And then building that's part of Zilliqa, an entity which is focusing on the metaverse. So for me, I get it on both sides equally as bad. When we're in a bear market, I cop it from a Zilliqa side. And then when the metaverse is dead, I get all the anger from a metaverse perspective. So for me, it's been pretty interesting because trying to juggle people's expectations with the horrible business models that we saw, with the bad founders that came into be, with kind of all the bad players that shifted and pivoted and moved the market, it really meant that a lot of time was put into reflecting inwards, pivoting. I mean, we went through a full rebrand mid this year. So a lot of changes happened. It wasn't easy, that's for sure. But it's one of those things where you just need to power through and just go full steam ahead, I guess you could say.
And is a metaverse market like a second level of hell beneath a Web3 bear market, sorry? Or are they separate things that you can enjoy some highs over here in the metaverse weekly while Web3 is down? Or is it?
It's very emotionally driven because we get to cop all the anger from whenever Meta does something. Like if Mark Zuckerberg would wake up tomorrow and be like, oh, I don't know, I don't want to do this on the platform. And then everyone's like, the metaverse is horrible, it's dead. And then next thing you know, Forbes and all of these articles are putting out 20 reasons why the metaverse was never going to survive anyway. And you're like, well, come on, that's not really fair. It's a lot of other people who are trying to make it survive. I guess I wouldn't say it's lower than the anger that comes out in the bear market. I would say it's probably at the same level. But then again, like I was saying, it's very emotionally driven because it's linked to a certain industry that is the front face of it are certain people who are already pretty big within the social media kind of space. You have Facebook, Insta, Snapchat, TikTok, and all of that. It's more targeted in terms of the anger that comes out of it. I remember there was a moment when I took a picture in a very dimly lit corner, and I said, I was just making fun of the market because every call I got on, people were saying to me, the metaverse is dead, what do we do now? Yeah, sorry, I think that was payback for me for shit-talking everyone. My internet got cut off. I guess, you know, people would get on a call and say to me, you know, what do we do now? The metaverse is dead, we need to pivot. And I'm like, well, no, not really, because you're assigned on client. I can't just pivot your strategy halfway because you read an article that claimed the metaverse is dead. It doesn't work that way. And then, you know, you'd wake up the next morning and the same client is saying to you, okay, now we want to do AI. And do you even know what AI is? Did you know how to apply it? What do you actually want? So there were a lot of fluctuating emotions that happened and that came out of it. A lot of it had to come back to us as builders having to re-educate, to support, to rebalance the expectations. So we turned into the nanny paired with a Tinder profile, paired with a psychologist, a lawyer at some point, technologist. So it was a lot of skills you had to pick up, that's for sure.
So the bear market is like being a Tinder nanny lawyer psychologist.
100%. 100%. Nail on the head.
The one bit I would take in there is that if you've got a relatively clear direction, if you've got a relatively clear objective of what you want to achieve to launch a business, to ideally generate profit, right? Most businesses try to generate profit. If that plan sticks, try to remind yourself of what it is that you actually are trying to set out in the meantime. Just because someone on Twitter says they don't like your project doesn't mean your business fundamentals are broken. You may need to reappraise if you're finding it harder to raise, or if you're finding it more difficult to attract the talent you need, or partnerships are more difficult, or people don't have the discretionary spend, or clients find you find it harder to find clients. But that just means you work harder, right? You just have to double down.
There's a lot of moving elements, and I think not a lot of people on the outside kind of see what actually happens from the inside. And that's, I try to educate people that it's because we white label our solutions personally as a metaverse company. We're not like an open world. We're not like a Decentraland or a Sandbox or a Roblox. We're more tailored to the client. So if the client's emotions are fluctuating based on what they're reading online every second, it makes it extremely difficult. It's like when I was in the advertising world and you do this amazing piece of work where you just got the whole team together and it was like over 20 people in a room. And then the guy would come back, the client, and say, oh, my daughter saw it, but she doesn't really like it. And you're like, oh, okay, sorry. Let me just take a team of 20 creatives, put them back in a room because your teenager didn't like the font that was used. If that's the case, why don't you do it? So I think there's a lot of that kind of expectation versus reality. Who has the skills to deliver? Who should be the one leading with a project? And when at what point do you tell the client, just trust me?
Trust me, bro. That one doesn't work so well on Twitter. I was about to draw parallels between the experience of working in advertising and working in Web3. It's like in Web3, the client's never in the room, and trust me, bro, is going to go a lot less far.
It doesn't really go far at all, actually.
Sweezy, you've just jumped into a new project as well. Things seem to be absolutely flying out the door for you, though. How is it that you guys have managed to find success in the bear market? If you want to give us just a couple of tips or a bit of context around what you're working on now, because you are working on NFTs in the bear market.
Yeah, we make technology to make NFTs more functional, where they can go beyond currencies and collectibles. And I think that's why, like, people are looking at us, and why we're having a lot of success is by being able to essentially be the technology that can say, hey, listen, we're all in the same space, right? If you're in the Web3 space, there's a couple of different aspects to it. One is, if you're in DeFi, DeFi is set. We all understand how DeFi works. I think the big question for the rest of us, is there an application beyond DeFi? And the two big use cases we've seen, currency is DeFi and collectibles were NFTs. And collectibles really is a tiny market if you look at collectibles as a whole. And I think the question was, can this technology do things beyond that? And what we've been able to show is that, yes, we can make this technology called NFTs into applications. These things can become games themselves. These things can become a whole other world of applications. And so I think that interest is really what has been able to move us forward and get our community to go from zero to over 2 million people in our community in just a few months. There's still people that want Web3 to succeed. There are still people that want to actively participate in communities. And I think they're just looking for those things that are novel and new that they see as the horizon, as the next thing. So I think that's true with this whole Web3 market, is everyone's looking for what's next. It's really hype driven. And so I guess by being able to show people what's next, that's really being able to drive our success right now.
There you go. So show, not tell. The next hype is one thing, and you can always attract investment, or you can maybe get some liquidity from projects if you market it. But if you're actually able to demonstrate success, if you're actually able to ship code, if you're able to bring a game to market and have people put their hands on it, that's better than people just aping into a token, right?
Yeah, like in the last 2 days, we put over 50,000 transactions on Polygon from an on-chain game, and the token is the game. So it's like the first time that you actually play the token. You don't have to have a dApp. The token is the game. That's really super novel. So we're the first project to put executable NFTs on Polygon. And so I think that's what's really got people excited.
Very nice. Congrats to you. For a minute there, I was listening and thinking back, so Bitcoin's the game too, isn't it? But maybe not. Maybe you're the second token to also be the game. But with that in the hopper, Emily, want to come to you. Crypto Recruiter, you've seen the highs, the lows. You've seen projects wanting hundreds of thousands of staff instantly, tomorrow, the constant hunt for Rust devs. What does the jobs market look like in a bear?
Yeah, it's great to be the crypto recruiter, just not right now. It is a bloodbath, honestly. I've been even talking to a lot of other recruiters in the crypto space. And man, a lot of people do not have jobs right now. The great news is companies are hiring. We've actually seen an uptick this specific month. I am building out an entire operations department for a company. So jobs are coming about. They just, don't need recruiters, because there were so many great people that were laid off. They're all applying to jobs. I think the challenging thing is, during a bear market, companies are really looking for people that are going to make an immediate impact on the bottom line. Right? How are you going to generate our company revenue? So they get the pick of the litter because so many people were laid off. So I think what's frustrating is they're not giving people opportunities to grow. They're looking for people that have the experience right there and right now. So yeah, that's what's going on. It's a hot mess, but it's picking up. It's getting a little bit more organized. But yeah, it's been brutal.
But is that a good news story for you, though? Because let's be real here, the ticket size, the more experienced hires are the ones that get the better rewards. So actually, in a market where people want more experienced, more talented, properly headhunted roles, there's more on the table for you there, potentially.
Yeah, revenue is great. But I think what really gets me going is that helping people make the right next step and make those advancements in their careers. So yeah, it's great for business. But that's what I'm passionate about, is genuinely helping people. And it just sucks that if they don't have the experience or the tools or the skills, there's not a whole lot I can do. And that just, it's hard, because so many people reach out asking for help, and it's genuine. It's genuine. Hey, please help me. And it's hard when you can't help. So that's what the bear market is like for me. It's depressing.
Yeah, that got me right in the feels. The revenue is great, but I'm here to do God's work. I'm here to make sure that more people can enjoy Web3 and get the roles and the dream jobs that they're after.
Yeah,
that's a nice way to think about it. People think all the recruiters out there are all sharky and snaky, and they're all trying to just reach out into people's DMs. That's not what it's all about. If you think about it the right way, or if you frame it positively, I think there's a good news story in there. Have any of you guys ever tried to find jobs during the bear market? Real talk, I changed from Polkadot to Midnight during the bear market. If we include this within the last 900 days, I did change projects, and maybe I fall into that bracket of somebody who's a bit more experienced, somebody who's a bit more senior in their role, who comes with, I guess, a few different things on the ticket that can help projects grow or that might be more relevant. But have any of you guys tried to go and look for new gigs or look for new things during a bear market?
I wanted to chime in on the best way to go about it, if that's okay. And I think that it's all about networking. It really is who you know. So for those that maybe don't have the experience but are really eager to grow, exercise your network, reach out to hiring managers on Discord, reach out to them on Twitter. If you do have the experience, ask for referrals from your fellow colleagues and peers within the space. So that's how I would start off if you're looking for a job right now.
What is the literal worst thing you can do?
Send a LinkedIn template that says, "Hi, I'm interested in this job because insert headline here. Do you have time to talk about it?" No, I don't have time to talk about it. If you're not going to put effort into sending me a message, why am I going to put effort into asking for your resume and setting up a 30-minute conversation? I still do, but it's, you know.
Yeah, I actually get quite a lot of them in my inbox. And the ones that I really like are the ones that start off with "Hi, sir slash madam." I'm like, at least just put 2 minutes to look at my picture and figure out that. Just 2 seconds is all I want of your time. I'll probably will reply, but just associate me with something that has to do with me.
At least you get a madam. I normally get emails like, "Hello, Mr. Heaver," or "Hello, sir." I was like, I don't know where I went wrong in life that I'm being called Mr. Heaver or sir, but here we are.
I did get a CV come through, or like a cover note from a CV come through in the last 6 months while I was at Midnight. And it started along the lines of "dear" and then no name. So just out of "dear" comma. Like, oh, okay. Really excited to work for your company. No inserted name of company. I've been really passionate about dog grooming for the past 2 years of my life, and really think that a role at Plucky Pups Limited is going to be the next major thing for me.
I get like, those all the time.
That's amazing. And it's literally somebody forgot to change the details of the previous job they applied for and says, if I don't make it at Plucky Pups, I can always try blockchain.
I guess in all reality, though, I know we're laughing around, but getting a job these days is extremely hard, especially in a company that cherishes you as an individual and actually wants you to grow within it. I know from my own family members, cousins and all that, who are looking at actively for jobs, I know how hard they basically sit down, they prepare, they send CVs. It's not at all that easy. So I think when it's cutthroat out there, and it actually is like a battlefield. So everyone wants to feel secure in a position that they have. Putting in the extra effort does go a long way, because there's been so many times where I've actually, to be honest with you, once I hired someone off Twitter, because they were actually very good. That was back when me and Twitter were still friends. They were actually up to date with everything going on. They showed initiative. They were pretty keen on what they wanted to do. So it doesn't always come down to a proper CV. I think sometimes just the discussion and the communication that you have makes a lot of difference. But know that there are millions of other people going for the same position that you are. And it really is a matter of being able to just build that connection and establish it with the person that's going to be quote unquote hiring you. It does go a long way. I'm probably not the best HR person, but I know something about building teams, and I know what I look for in my team. And I definitely would not be wanting someone that does not put 2 minutes into realizing whether I'm a sir or a madam into the team. So that would probably be my 2 cents on this point.
Another great point is going to the events. So I hired people that approached me at events and they just wanted to discuss something I was interested in. Or they read an article that I published in Forbes last week. And that's how it shows that the person did a little bit of, you know, put in 2 minutes into learning who's the hiring manager and what the hiring manager wants or interested in or what the desires of the company are. So they've approached, they talked about this and that and the other, and so you can see their energy. I believe in that. If you meet a person and they have a positive energy, they have a can-do attitude, I don't care if they don't know about crypto law, I'll teach them. That's easy. Okay, there must be a lawyer. That's the bare minimum.
Law degree is optional.
No, law degree is not an optional. You have to be a lawyer, have to have some experience, but and huge interest in crypto. And if you don't have enough experience in crypto law, we'll teach you that. That's easy. But yeah, positive can-do attitude and also approaching people, like talking to people. Go and talk to everybody you meet.
Some of us don't like going up to people though and just randomly talking to them.
There's also the ones that blindside you, where they come in, they're like, oh, I'm really good at this and I really want to do that. So you're like, okay, let me give them a try. And then they get on, you're having a chat and they're like, yeah, so anyways, I can give you metaverse services. I have a team of 60 people that can do it extremely cheap. I'm like, Jesus Christ, why did you blindside me like that? And I put in the time and effort to get on this call and then you're selling me your services, which is the same as my services. So how is this going to work?
I get that a lot. I get a lot of companies that are like, I'm hiring, and then we have a conversation, and then they're like, oh, we're a dev shop. We're actually, can you refer us to new business? But I think it's funny how in the bull market, companies are all like holding hands and kumbaya, and then in the bear market, it's just like, you're gone. So I just think that's hilarious.
Keir, as something of a, I don't know, like a solopreneur type, have you had people reach out asking, hey, I would like to be the Discord moderator for the Authorverse, or hey, I'd like to be able to build out Python, Rust, C++ for the Authorverse. I want to write your next book. What kind of people reach you? Because you're relatively famous, you're relatively well known. What kind of cold approaches do you get?
90% is the usual that we offer web development services. And they usually start with something like Dear Kerry. So they spell my name wrong. And my response is to look at their name and then shuffle some of their letters around and respond with that. That's fun. Indeed, sometimes people reach out and they're just trying to, can I do a specific task for you? And I have had people offering to ghostwrite a book for me, which I think is ludicrous given that I'd rather write my own books. Thank you very much. And the other one I find funny is I'm a solopreneur. I was going to describe myself as a one-man consultancy, and then I get these LinkedIn requests where they want to help me grow and scale my business. And and they will help me select the right platform. And I think, this is, if you'd read anything about me, you'd know that I'm not looking to grow my business. Not all of us are looking to hire tens and hundreds and thousands of people out there. Some of us are perfectly happy in the niche that we've found and just want to continue like that. But yeah, I think one of the things that's coming out through all of these messages is the take some time before you reach out and send a message. And it really, just as little as 5 or 10 minutes already puts you ahead of 80% of the pack, I would say. It's literally that big. And I just wonder what is going on in the minds of people who are trying to use this medium, because it seems to me that's obvious, right?
Friend the AI has hindered progress significantly here, because it's now so easy to write a tailored message that comes across very blatantly as an untailored message that's been written by some form of automation that is using some keywords that might give you a 10% likelihood that somebody might continue to read beyond the first of 17 paragraphs, but may actually probably not. I even had somebody who put out a message yesterday. I got one yesterday and ended with, it was 3 or 4 paragraphs of I don't care, followed by, oh, and by the way, sorry, this wasn't a personal message. This was written by my AI, but that's pretty cool anyway, isn't it? Lol, smiley face. Point, block.
Carlos has a question about how do you get being a Discord moderator, community manager? And so there's a lot of people looking for those types of remote roles, and there's really easy ways that you can do that, Carlos. One is be active. So like in our community, we hire the people that are the most active that are already helping other people. And we keep tabs on who are the most active. So like people that are running these communities, we know who are the people that we want to bring on, and we know who they are based on what they do. So just as we were talking about networking, get in a community and be active, learn and do as much as you can and be helpful. And then know who the people that work for the company are. Make sure you interact with them on a daily basis. If you do that, you can easily, when they know they have roles, they will reach out to you directly.
That's the kind of internship thing, isn't it? Right? It's the unpaid work to demonstrate your credentials, but in the remote digital world.
Yeah, it's no different than like the old story of the dude walking in and says, "I'll do anything if you hire me." And the guy just hands him a broom, and the dude starts sweeping the floors for 2 weeks before they give him a desk job. It's like the same concept. You just got to get in there and start working.
I think also there you pointed out a really important thing, which is differentiating yourself from the rest, right? everybody, if the average candidate is putting together a CV and then sending it off to 10, 20, 30 different job opportunities, they look the same as hundreds of other people. So how is the hiring manager going to distinguish between them? And the answer is, if something jumps out, if they've written a book or they've contributed to an open source project, or as you said, they've acted as a community moderator on some project just for the sheer love of it, that just puts you ahead of everybody else. Because otherwise you just blend in with all the other candidates. And when you've said we want this many years of Python and this many years of having done IT admin, there will be tens, hundreds, thousands of people who match that. But it's when you get the applicant who has something on there that says, oh, that really connects with me, and then you're on to the next level. And the best thing is to actually get in a situation where you're not applying for the jobs, where the people with the jobs are coming to you. And you can do that. This is what hit me in 2017 or 2018. I've been cold calling to try and make sales for my startup company. And I did it for 3 months and I absolutely hated it. And I thought there has to be a better way of getting what my company's doing out there than this horror. I can't believe that there are people who do this for years, decades. And then I thought, how can I get people to actually find me? And that's when I started working on my social media profile. I wrote a book. I started putting repositories out there with software that I'd written that I thought other people would find useful. And that's got me into the fortunate situation that I've been in for the last 3 or 4 years, which is that I haven't looked for work in the last, I think, 4 years now. People come to me. They say, we'd like you to work for us. And the fact is, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Have you read a book, Key Person of Influence?
No.
He wrote a book about being a person of influence.
Sorry? Oh, okay. Yeah. There's a really great book called Key Person of Influence, and that is exactly what it describes. Don't go chasing butterflies. Work on your garden. The butterflies will come themselves. And there's actually pillars how you do that. I'll share with everybody who's interested. It's absolutely amazing.
Okay. I just want to add one point to the how realistic it is when it comes to getting a job. Sorry, I think we've been on this topic for too long. Maybe you want to move on. But I think there are two things that people need to keep in mind. One is your skill set and what value add you bring to a team. But the other is company culture. You could be perfect on paper. You could be perfect at what you do. But if you do not fit the company culture, there's a higher chance that you're going to be let go and not ruin the synergy of the team. So I think it's extremely important. I can see that finger going. So I'm obviously saying something correct. Crypto recruiter going like, yeah, she's right. But company culture, if you are perfect on paper, but you don't fit the culture, then I'm sorry, but it means you're not going to remain, unfortunately.
It's the biggest reason for turnover. Culture fit is king. It's everything. Mm-hmm.
There we go. In that, we've had probably 20 minutes worth of talk about what it's like to have a job in the bear market. We've heard the blockchain Gandalf origins. It's an easy one. It's an easy one to go with. But I think also for this audience, maybe I let it run a bit longer because actually a lot of people tuning into this probably are in a similar kind of position right now. So hopefully that was helpful to you guys listening in. We also got to hear the blockchain Gandalf origin story. That was when he first put on the robes, when he first donned the pointed hat, grabbed the selfie stick and went out into the woods. I was like, you know what? Cold calling sucks. You know what sucks less? Walking in deep midwinter talking to a cell phone.
When it's minus 25 degrees Celsius and you can't feel your fingers, yeah. The fact is that I prefer that. I would rather walk in a forest when it's minus 25 degrees and vodka is freezing if it's left out, recording videos, and then I would spend 8 hours cold calling a day. So
the vodka freezes, allegedly. Some of my friends tell me that the vodka freezes. And on that note, Keir Finlow-Bates, back to you, sir. We're going to talk about what is it like being a linked influencer in the bear market? Because as you said, you know, digital channels is actually a fantastic way of getting out when things are low, when you want to increase your reach, when you want to maybe try and make more and stretch the budget further. Actually, digital channels can be a major thing. But what have you observed in the last, let's call it 900 days or the last little while around the ability to get the message out, the ability to continue to promote Web3, the ability to continue to demonstrate the technology that we're all very passionate about, when there's so much else going on and so many other shiny things, shiny artificially intelligent things going on around us?
I have to say, I actually prefer this kind of situation, what we've had for the last couple of years. When you have all that hype and excitement, you get a lot of nonsense. You not only do you just get lots of scams where people are intentionally trying to rip people off, you get the enthusiasm sort of gets to the point where people are proposing unrealistic things and nobody is calling them on it because you have that feeling that anything is possible. And I know some people love that feeling. They probably also like things like base jumping and snowboarding and stuff like that, which I would avoid myself. Whereas when you have this kind of period, people are a bit more thoughtful about what they are going to spend their time on next and what they're going to spend their money on. And that shows in social media. I get more sensible questions during this period of time. And I feel like when I'm talking about things that people are actually genuinely interested because of the material that I'm talking about and not because of the opportunities they think that the material will lead to. So you get less, for starters, I get a lot less questions from people saying, how do I learn programming? How do I get into blockchain? And these are people who've woken up one day and thought, hey, I could become very rich if I became a blockchain programmer. And that, quite frankly, has to be the worst possible motivation for going into becoming a blockchain programmer, because you will hate it and you will be bad at it. Whereas during the bear market, if somebody asks me, how do I become a blockchain programmer? They've actually thought about it. They actually think, hey, I think I might like programming. I think I might like blockchain. I'll talk to Keir and see what he says.
Fair enough. So you're having the polar opposite experience to Sandra, who over on Twitter is getting the Karen calls and the can't devs do something tweets. You're actually getting genuinely maybe more yeah, honest or integral engagement.
But we're addressing different markets.
Fair enough. You guys, I haven't done the overlap on your two audiences, but you both got a metaverse. That's
true, but I'm sure hers is much more likely to succeed than mine.
Much far less doomed. I want to say I've observed the emergence of a certain type of, and I'm talking only for LinkedIn here because that's where I do most of my content, all of my public content, the emergence of broetry. Do you guys, not if you know what broetry is or if you guys can recognize what broetry is, a particular type of post which is designed to generate rage or to basically pull from the anger, frustration, annoyance and rage of those people who are having a hard time in the bear market. And it starts something like, I can't believe everyone's getting blockchain wrong, followed by, here are five things that people are doing when they're getting blockchain wrong, followed by five automatically generated things that are immediately obvious to everybody that provide absolutely no insight whatsoever, followed by, comment if you're as angry as me about all the things that people are getting wrong in blockchain, followed by 5,000 comments of everybody being really angry about the obvious things that everybody else has just pointed out. Is it just me, or has that been appearing on everybody else's thread too?
Looks like it's just you.
God damn it. No.
Yeah, it's just your timeline.
I think there's a more general thing there, Anthony, which is that one of the things I find on LinkedIn is that if I post something that I think is insightful or useful, I get about half as many comments as normal, but they are usually more thought out and engaged. Whereas if I were go and post something that is very close to, hey, guys, have you noticed how wet water is? What do you think about water? Do you think it's wet as well? Then you get, yeah, agree, totally. And you get all these, you get a lot of comments, but they don't really say anything. And you feel like you're talking to a bunch of automatons rather than real human beings. And social media has always been like that. And the thing you have to learn is that a lot of comments or a lot of likes is actually gives you a kind of buzz when it happens, but it's not worth anything. And a thought out comment or a discussion in the comments is worth much more than 100 or 1,000. I agree.
I like this content. Please share more.
Anybody noticed that dust is really dry? It's just, you can post one a day, right? Stones are really hard. Lead is really heavy.
There's another type of content on LinkedIn that absolutely grinds my gears, and that comes from lawyers. For example, a regulator does something completely stupid, and everybody's praising it. Zero insight how useless it is for the industry. Zero comments how it could have been done better, or how it could have been done different. There's just, oh, look at this, this regulator has done this, oh, these are the key, and it's, my timeline are mainly lawyers, because that's the content I interact with, and that I try to see what else is happening in other jurisdictions. But what really grinds my gears are the professionals who are not putting 2 seconds of a thought into, was it even useless? No, this regulator has just spent $5 million of public funds onto passing something which is completely useless for the industry, which is really sad. But then again, they're probably doing it to be in good books with the regulators, which I have zero interest of being in good books with regulators. On contrary, I publicly pick up fights and arguments for my clients. Probably understandable, but it's very obvious, and I hope it's obvious to entrepreneurs who are hiring this type of lawyers, that they are not actually putting any thought into what's happening, which is a bit sad, to be honest. Because
I don't think it's obvious, because we have the same problem in the marketing world, right? Like you hear of someone writes an article about, oh my God, this company did X, Y, and Z in Web3, or they did this. And you're like, yeah, but no consumer is ever going to use that. Like the Lufthansa NFT example, let's just call that one out. No fucking consumer is ever going to use it. But everyone was talking about it. And because all these people are talking about it, you've got now people like thinking that these people are, and they'll reach out to them because they want, I don't know, I'm with you. Like someone will take a flash moment, talk about it, but not really add any insights or really talk about there is no lack of value. There is no value here. Let's call this out. Like, this is a PR stunt and this is not a progression of the technology.
Oh, I've got a good, yeah, got a good one on this.
That was like when the EU brought a DJ into the metaverse and it cost them like, I think, $500,000 and everyone was like losing their mind around it. Yeah, I remember that day.
That was
Did you
metaverse.
Ever go into the EU gateway metaverse thing they had where you ended up as Clippy? Did you see that one?
They, what, are you talking about Microsoft Clippy, like the old Clippy?
Yeah, the EU spent, I think it was €500,000 putting together a metaverse, as they called it, which was your usual kind of weird, looked like a cross between Fortnite and Myst. And the characters you got to choose from all looked like paper clips. So they looked like weird bits of metal that had been bent with arms and legs and they were walking around. And I queued for about 20 minutes to get in. There was this thing about how only 30 people had turned up at the party, but the media, as they always do, got it wrong. It's that it could only support 30 people, which is equally dire, but there were people queuing to get in, including me, and it's my one video on YouTube that has 10 times more views than any others. It's literally just me walking around for 50 seconds in the EU metaverse before I got kicked out because it ran so badly.
All those, but you've got to wonder, Microsoft nostalgics, dying to see some more Clippy content.
I'd love to think that the developers thought, well, this is a load of nonsense, but the EU Commission has signed off on a $500,000 budget, so we might as well make it, and then. I really hope that they put that in as a joke, because that's what I would do if they paid me that money, is I would put something like that in there.
I've got another favorite one of something that I've seen emerging from the down times, right? When everyone's down bad or when the struggle for getting work is a little bit harder. As soon as a project comes out, and one of the more recent ones that was deemed to be a dramatic failure, but I actually think was a success in the end, was the Porsche NFT collection. I don't know if you guys remember that one, but I think it was around December last year was when Porsche dropped an NFT collection. They were charging about $1,500 or 0.911, 0.911 ETH at the time to be able to be participating. And the fume when they didn't manage to sell out in 10 seconds and that they didn't achieve their goals and it was a disaster. And all of the comments were, these guys must have had really terrible advisors. By the way, I'm a Web3 advisor. Please hire me for your next project. And the self-interest in all of the comments, you could just read between the lines of everyone saying that you are not as good a Web3 advisor as me. They should have picked me. Hey, Porsche, pick me next time. I was like, you can't
well, good
really.
Job. If you're a consultant who can sell their like multi-million dollar consultancy fee to Porsche for absolutely useless NFTs, good luck to you. If this is what you can do with your sales skills, that's fantastic. I remember my first blockchain experience back in Maersk. I was general counsel within Maersk Group, the largest shipping group in the world, and we had the first blockchain enterprise thing on Hyperledger, which is neither block nor chain. But you still, when you go to university to study master's degree in blockchain technology, I don't know even what that is, but you study that as an example of the first enterprise blockchain project. I think it was called like Hyperlens, and it was just shut down a couple of years ago.
TradeLens,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And it was shut down a couple of years ago for exactly the same reason I said it would not succeed back in 2015, because which competitor of Musk would put their data for everybody to see and share? It's completely useless. But IBM charged $1.5 billion for that project, so good luck to them. Musk had money to spend, so here you go. But we're seeing exactly the same thing. Consultants are charging millions for NFT. I can mint an NFT in 10 minutes, but a government that I'm advising right now has been approached by multiple consultants offering multi-million NFT issuance. Come on.
Consultants going to consult. Don't hate the game, hate the players.
Just the thing on that is that it doesn't just happen on LinkedIn. Sometimes I've been on panels as well, and I've just looked at my co-panelists. I stopped doing these events now. It was a long time ago, but I'd be looking at them like, where did you get these numbers from? Or what? Where did you grab these facts from? Like, they're completely not true, irrelevant, not really to the topic. The thing is with LinkedIn, though, is that when you have a post and then you have so many people commenting under it, they start these battles where you have like three people replying to the same kind of comment. And then no one is the voice of reason. Now it's just a matter of how can I one-up you with what I'm saying to prove that I'm right or you're wrong. I remember during that period where everyone was going from being a metaverse expert to an AI expert, I remember I put out a post that was something along the lines of AI is stupid because of blah, blah, blah. It was meant to trigger people. That was the reason of it. But anyways, it was linked to an actual content piece. And I think I got over like 600 comments of people not even reading what I actually wrote. They were just like, why did you call AI stupid? What do you mean AI is stupid? How dare you say that? Stick to your metaverse, stay in the metaverse. So like it was just, they didn't even read what I actually wrote underneath it. And most of my comments were like, can you please just read my post? Because can you actually click on read more and try and figure out what I actually wrote?
Yeah, well, that's how you engagement farm. This is engagement farming 101 with Sandra Heller. Thank you for the valuable insights.
Yeah. Make sure you get the good goods.
That's it. Subscribe to Sandra for more rage farming. Just before we move on, Emily, you are one of, I think, the only, if not the only one of us who is prolific on TikTok. Could you please give us some insight? I don't know whether Keir has TikTok or not. I haven't checked.
I have. I've got one video on it.
Fair enough. And we can come to that in a minute. How has bear market TikTok been for Web3? Is this a game changer for you? I mean, I see some of the stuff that you make on TikTok and then post on other channels. How is it over there?
It's not very spicy. There's not a huge Web3 community on TikTok. I could probably put a lot more effort into it. I find the Instagram UI is a lot easier than the TikTok UI. So I like to make posts there and then post them on TikTok. I think it's growing. There's a couple influencers in the Web3 space that I'm following, but I'm noticing there's not a whole lot of traction on posts. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter how funny they are. We're not getting a lot of traction. I'm a big fan of TikTok. I'm a big fan of Instagram. I think it's a great way to gather more information while relaxing. But yeah, it is a challenge. It is a challenge for sure. I think I've only got 100 followers on TikTok. So I got to put more effort into that. People love the dancing videos. People love when I humiliate myself on social media. It's great.
Even if it doesn't work out there, I feel like even for those 100 people out there, they're getting something. But then you're getting to use the create the content that you can then go and post on LinkedIn and actually bang over there. So maybe the serialization works for nothing else. Guys, we've got 2 minutes left. We have gone and we've smashed through all of the topics we were planning to do and more. Spent a lot of time talking about things that we didn't think we were going to spend too much time talking about. So let's come to the last question of the day. Let's round it off with some sagely advice for those people listening in. I'm going to ask each one of you for one short tip for how to stay sane during a bear market. For those people who are still down bad, for those people who are still waiting for the recovery, it might be there soon. What would be your one tip for staying sane? Starting with you, Sweezy, what would be your one tip to stay sane during a bear market?
My tip of staying sane is having some really good friends that are smart and just connecting with them on a regular basis and venting and then just letting each other build each other up. It's literally like I do that on a regular basis.
Love that. You've now taken at least 50% of the other guys' one thing that they were going to say. So I'm going to give them another minute to figure out what they're going to say as a second choice. Sandra, what would be your one tip to stay sane during a bear market?
Yeah, push notifications off. That's pretty much it.
Love that one. Keir?
I'd say ignore it. It's a construct.
Artificial construct.
Yeah, other people may be jumping ship or running off after the next shiny thing. Maybe the VCs aren't pumping out as much money. It's swings and roundabouts. Things are more sane, less lucrative. If you're in it for the long run, you won't care. I mean,
there we go. There is no bear. Love that from you, Keir. Emily, your thoughts on how to stay sane in the bear market?
Use it as an opportunity to learn and to build, right? So things are a little bit slow, a lot slow on the employment front. If you're building your own project, that counts as experience, right? You can put that on your resume in a separate section for projects. I think people are going to be impressed with those that... Sorry. I think people are going to be impressed.
Drum roll.
With people that stayed in the bear market throughout this whole time. There were plenty of people that left, went back to TradFi, went back to SaaS. But I think those that stuck it out, in a good spot.
There we go. Thank you, Emily. I hope whichever drum kit has fallen off your wall around the corner there is in still in good shape.
It was that cat. Sorry.
All right. The cat's been at the drums. On that bombshell, Irina, close the show, please. What is your final piece of advice for those to stay sane during the bear market?
I have two for a press of one. So stack sets, ignore just, you know, whatever little money you have and you're not afraid to lose. Stack sets, educate yourself about Bitcoin because everything else is noise. And the second one, I am very privileged and lucky to live in the forest. So I walk around the forest, I hug trees. It really helps my mental state of mind. And if go out on the nature, go fishing, go running outside and enjoy the little things in life. That really helps.
There we go. Thank you, Irina. Stack sats, hug trees, touch grass.
Oh. By the way, Anthony, are you aware that Bitcoin has gone up nearly $1,000 during the duration of the show?
Has it really? Is that
You're welcome, everyone.
There we go. You're very welcome, the Web3 community. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining in. Thank you so much for joining this roast. It's been a fantastic one, as always. Thank you, Emily, Keir, Sweezy, Sandra, Irina, an exceptional cast. Shout out Diego Borgo, who wasn't here. He couldn't make it last minute. So if you're here waiting for Diego Borgo content, I'm sorry. You're going to have to wait for more Diego memes in the comment sections of my posts. Hope you guys have a safe and speedy recovery from the bear market. Good times around the corner. And if they're not, just get your head down, ignore it, and touch some grass. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe out there. Thanks again for listening to the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast. As always, opinions in this episode are mine and those of my guests alone. If you want to find out more, please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Check out some of the other episodes on the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast and check out the YouTube channel, also called Blockchain Won't Save the World. Stay safe out there.